Achtung, Achtung, das ist ein Lore-Podcast. Es könnte also zu titelgebenden Elementen Spoiler enthalten. Dankeschön.
Rein in den Suit, raus aus dem Vault.
Das ist NewcastCast,
dein Fallout-Lore-Podcast.
Einen wunderschönen guten Abend, guten Morgen, guten Mittag, grüß Gott und Shalom. Wir sind wieder da mit einem Nuka Talk Spezial. Zweimal Nuka Cast in einer Woche, das ist ja der Hammer. Gleich geht's los mit einem kleinen Interview, was Kelly und ich mit dem lieben Overseer Kyle geführt haben, und zwar auf Englisch. Er hat ganz viel erzählt von seinem Kanal, von seinem Podcast-Projekt, in seinem Broadcast quasi. Es ist ja der Vault Broadcast. Und da geht's darum, dass er immer Leute einlädt, die er interviewt aus der Community und einfach alles ein bisschen zusammentreibt. Das ist eine wunderschöne Sache. Und deshalb haben wir ihn dabei, und das war echt ein ganz, ganz tolles Gespräch. Bisschen politischer Inhalt und so, richtig cool. Genau. Und ihr hört das wahrscheinlich auch, einige von euch, während sie auf dem Weg zur Gamescom sind, auf der Gamescom, vielleicht abends in ihrem Hotel noch mal ein bisschen Podcast hören wollen oder. Viele Möglichkeiten. Es ist gerade Gamescom. Wir hatten einen Livestream auf Twitch, haben da ein bisschen was besprochen. Vor allen Dingen den neuen Trailer zu Fallout Season 2. Mega geil. Wir sind mega geflasht alle noch. Kommt auf unseren Discord oder schaut auf der Gamescom vorbei. Und zwar in Halle 5.1. Das ist das Cosplay Village. Da haben unsere lieben Collab-Kollegen von Vaults ihren Stand. Aber auch Raptobots zusammen mit Mando Media, richtig coole Leute, die richtig, richtig crazy Fallout-Stuff zaubern. Und Amazon Prime hat auch noch einen Fallout-Stand. Wenn ihr Vaults finden wollt und unsere tolle Flagge, dann haltet mal nach einem Fallout-Wimmelbild Ausschau. Ja, wenn ihr Fotos macht, verlinkt uns da gerne bei den bekannten, verdächtigen Programmen und Plattformen. Da werden wir sehr, sehr glücklich drüber. Haut ordentlich was in die Stories. Macht gern auch Collab-Anfragen mit uns. Wir nehmen das dann mit in unser Profil auf. Lasst uns die Fallout-Community noch ein bisschen weiter zusammenwachsen. Ansonsten viel Spaß mit dem Interview und bleibt schön verstrahlt. Und wir sehen uns.
Talk, our very special bonus material here on NukaCast. And as you can hear, we're speaking in English today because we have an English guest. I have Kelly with me, and she invited our guest Kyle. Hello, Kelly. Hello, Kyle.
Hello, and thank you for having me on the show. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Kelly over on my podcast, Vault Broadcast, a few weeks ago. So this is a really exciting chance to come back together, and I'm really honored to be here on your podcast today.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm very, very welcome. So today we switch roles. So today I interview you.
Certainly.
And let us start. What are you doing, Kai? What is your podcast about?
Yeah, so to give you a little bit of context, Vault Broadcast, we just talked about having Kelly on, is all about interviewing fellow Fallout content creators from all across the fandom, whether they are into physical creation, like making props, maybe they do something with the TTRPG, that could be painting minifigs. It could be event planners and hosts who are doing all these fantastic Fallout meet and greets. Or it can be digital creators, even people who are out there all across the internet. Maybe they've got their own podcast. I've sat down with a couple folks who do narrative, story-driven podcasts. Some of those tie right back into the TTRPG. So the community's got this very nice circle to it where everything, all these creators seem to be interlinked in some way. And I always struggle with losing people in the algorithm. I really hate algorithms. I love social media when it's actually social, and I hate it when it's about separating people and it's all about AdSense and making, you know, and it's for the big companies. And for us, the little guys, we all have a hard time keeping tabs. You follow someone, you subscribe to their content, and you never see them pop up in your feed again. And that happens to me so often that I wanted to show where I could give people a one place stop that they can meet all these other creators. And it's also a really good way of sort of throwing myself into the deep end of the pool, so to speak, where I'm not great at going out and quote networking for the sake of just networking. I need a real conviction and a purpose to go out and talk to people. So I thought if I have folks come on for this show, it's a super win-win. I get to meet a bunch of new creators. We get to have them all in this one succinct, organized feed that other people can find them. It's really advantageous that I get to ask them about who they are inspired by and who they recommend we follow. So I sort of have created for myself this perpetual energy machine, in a sense, where I do have a new guest coming through, recharging my Fallout batteries every week. And that's just one of the creations we do, because on top of that, we have the TTRPG, which I could talk about later, but we got a whole separate channel and a whole separate podcast that just deals with our Tales from Tomorrow Fallout TTRPG.
That's also really, really cool. So it's like but I feel like you're kind of a glue for everyone. So you glue the community together so that everyone knows of each other and can follow. I found it interesting. So I watched a few of your episodes. I'm not on the top. I guess I'm stuck on episode 9 currently. So not on top. But this was funny. There's one person I follow on Instagram, actually. And he was like, oh, I'm now on the podcast. And I was like, oh, cool.
Kyle, you're doing something right, because when you moved here into our channel, so the listener don't know that, but we see each other here, and I saw your face, and I was like, hey, this guy looks familiar. So I was like, oh, I follow him, and I see his sometimes very political stories every day, and yeah, I think you're doing a good job. So I totally get the problem with the algorithm. With miniature painters, it's always like you see something cool in your feed, like, and you are, this guy is awesome, he's doing so much stuff, I have to follow him, and then I already follow him. So
honestly, that's it. That's what happens everywhere. And I've toyed around with content creation, probably my earliest stuff being 2017, but a whole lifetime ago, back in 2011, I was in college for social media, and the landscape has changed so much. Like, I've always been, The earliest things that ever drew me to social media when I wasn't a creator was, ironically, the gaming and cosplay space. And that happened sort of through proxy. Like, I was following podcasters. Again, this is 2006, 2008. The internet is a very different place. YouTube is a baby on the scene. You cannot upload, 3-hour videos to YouTube at this time. And here I am following some of these like really early podcast creators who were doing stuff for World of Warcraft and all these other games. And they were linking together at the time all these nerdy fandoms, the prop makers. They were talking tabletop games. They were really anything nerdy, even stuff that I personally don't care about. Like, I'm not a Marvel or DC superhero guy. That's just not me. But having all of that surrounding, well, I credit no short order that being in some of those communities really helped me avoid some of the burnout that happens in some parts of Pennsylvania here, or in the United States. Pardon me for the foreign listeners, I'm speaking too local. But in the United States, I live in Pennsylvania, and it's a very rural area. And a lot of people don't feel like they've got options in life. A lot of people don't leave their hometown unless they're forced to by economic hardship. And I just remember in the earliest days that, like, I got this much better glimpse of what the world could offer, what communities like this could do for each other. And so I my earliest inspiration is that podcasting. And so now that I'm it kind of probably at the age those guys were, something like that, I feel like it's my time to give back. And you mentioned the face. I've been really heavily leaning into recently someone on TikTok saying, you already look like Vault Boy. Why don't you just start doing your hair like that? And so I went to the barber recently. I was like, here's a picture of Vault Boy. Can you just give me a little? I'm not saying I do it super well, folks at home. My hair is, I'm not an artist. I'm not a glam man. But
as you mentioned it.
But I'm leaning into it. Overseer Kyle, all the rest. But it couldn't be more of like an ironic sort of thing, like you mentioned with the stories, the politics, all that. I'm not a proponent of Vault Tech in real life, but I love the irony of it in the game. I think it summarizes the Fallout hypocrisy really nicely. Yeah. You know, we got this great company that's all smiles, yeah, but oops, we may have dropped the nuclear bomb to start the war to fund our shareholders. Oops.
Totally. Don't talk about fascism if you don't want to mention capitalism, right?
There you... Oh, my gosh. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I can see Kelly always liking my political stories over there, so I'm like, I feel like I'm probably in a good... a good group.
You're in good company, I think.
Good. Great to meet other comrades from abroad that share similar opinions on it, because we're really suffering here in the United States. I live in a little bit of a... I know you guys are in Germany, too. I watch what your police... Alone, right? Yeah, I watch how your police handle people over there, too. It's just... It feels like I'm living... Like I've got like blinders or goggles, maybe like a little face visor that goes up, because like one moment... My main task is like, here, let's do Fallout stuff that's fun and engaging the community. But then the next you look at Instagram and you're like, oh, God, the world is burning outside the window. Yeah. And that's a challenge on its own. That's something I try and balance each and every day.
Yeah. For me, I don't get much political in my stories. It's like my little safe space with crafting and so on. And that's why I like people also doing political stuff, because it needs to be said.
Yeah, and Fallout gives you a good opportunity to link it together, because there's so much stuff happening in the games and in the lore that is pretty similar to what's happening right now in the world. And yeah.
You're very right there. I was doing more straight up political facing content on Twitch last year. Ever since, I don't know how much I can say on this show, so I'll be polite to the censors of wherever this might land. But let's just say that an ongoing conflict in the Middle East really pushed myself into a spot that I just didn't feel like I could be quiet anymore. And so I was doing political focus, like solely political content, and I was able to gather a pretty great group of people just over on Twitch, like 30 average viewers at a time over there, which is pretty substantial. I mean, right now when I'm doing Fallout 76 stuff, we maybe have like 10, 11, like the number is growing. I've certainly, there's a time discrepancy there. But I guess what I'm trying to say is I, with the recent election in the United States, made the very conscious decision, told my audience, I said, we are going to be having these conversations, but in a much less direct way, because, well, the iron curtain of sorts, the censorship is very much here. And I thought, well, why not try and marry together two things that I'm very passionate about, Fallout and politics? Like you said, you can't have Fallout without politics. You can't have the nuclear devastation of the Fallout universe without the imperialist war over resources. Like there's no need to nuke your neighbor if you're not trying to steal what they have and, you know, beat them in the political capital stage. And so yeah, I just leaned into marrying the two and have found a middle ground where I promote the Fallout stuff, so it gains a lot of followers and I love it truly. But then I also, like Kelly said, you know, in the stories, I slide in a bunch of stuff there that I feel like needs to be said. And it like I said, it's my way of trying to find a middle ground, trying to keep people interested so that those political stories can actually hit. I think there's something on the opposite end. When you're only focused on politics, people do get a burnout. How much trauma can people handle in one day? And they start to just ignore it. So probably some days I'm guilty of overloading those stories with too much politics. They should probably have a little more Fallout flair in there.
The mixture makes it, but it's funny how is that with the censorship. I guess the irony was that I guess the USA said that criticized the German censorship, and it's like, which censorship? What are you criticizing? This is like,
yeah. Don't worry, it's getting worse.
Yeah.
I, especially over the last couple of years, have paid a lot of attention to German politics as well. And what can I do? Preach to the choir here and just say a lot of the things that the German government have allowed the police state to do, especially against protesters, preemptively having the ability to access their homes and tap their devices without them actively having committed a crime is... far beyond what people would consider I don't know. I mean, it's just the most authoritarian, totalitarian stuff you could do. And keep in mind, this is not a competition of like, oh, Germany's doing worse. Germany, all these countries are rushing headfirst as fast as they can, and they're all sharing.
Yeah, we had it in my neighborhood back when I was living in Hamburg. There was one guy like swearing at our what is it, defense? I don't know. For the inner security, the minister of the city for inner security. He called him Pimmel Andy. His name was Andy. Andy too, yeah. And he called him like Penis Andy on Twitter back when it was called Twitter. And they raided his flat and took all his devices and stuff. Just with a personal attack. This is like...
We just had, this is a tiny bit more physical than that, but we just had a guy get charged with a felony crime here in the United States for throwing a hoagie, a sandwich, at a police officer.
Yeah, I read about it, yeah.
I mean, come on, man. If you're gonna slap someone with the most serious, like a felony, for those outside the United States, if you have a felony, you can't get normal work after that point. Like, you are now... Sorry, I know we're getting really deep politics, but for those outside the United States, just a brief history lesson that slavery is still legal here in the United States, so long as it is punishment for a crime. So a lot of what the government's been trying to do, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, they're both on the same side at the end of the day, they've been pushing to just up the severity of any crime, that if you spit on a police officer, you hit them with a sandwich. You know, it's now the same as, like, I don't know, shooting an assault rifle at them or something. I mean, that's the hypocrisy, right? One is a sandwich, the other is an assault rifle round, and yet they could get you the same type of restrictions and permanent life destruction.
Oh, yeah, the repression.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. I mean, this is really off a fallout, but it isn't, though.
No, it's not that off a fallout.
Yeah.
For those who like Fallout 76, there is a lot about this in that region, and it's one of the reasons I get a little annoyed, a little chafed when someone might tell me I had one of these on TikTok recently, they're like, keep politics out of the game, man. And I'm like, how can I? The 76 region, Appalachia, is about automation coming through, which we're seeing massively with AI. We're just seeing the sense that there's billboards in the United States saying, like, why don't you replace your staff with AI? And it's forcing that existential crisis onto people. But in response to that, what we see in Appalachia, as it really mirrored in real life too, is that these coal miners and other miners from that region, West Virginia, etc., decided to unionize, organize, and fight back against these all-powerful companies who were defended by the state. We see this in real life with the Battle of Blair Mountain, where the U.S. military was deployed against strikers. That's our real life. And then that is mirrored in the game, as you can see it as you go towards the ash heap in that region. There's all kinds of signs out, like, give my father his job back and, you know, pay us a fair wage, things like that. And the response within Fallout was to deploy Protectrons as strike breakers, including Mr. Gutsy models as well. And there's some holotapes. There's some lore written on, I believe it's like the Hawthorne questline terminals down there. Hornwright, pardon me, I said the wrong name. Hornwright terminals, where they talk about deploying them using lethal force against the protesters. I believe there's even a story of like a journalist who hopped the fence within that, and they had like a shooting accident. Oops, we accidentally shot to kill that journalist who snuck in the property. And so, I mean, it's very much real life. It's just put in a Fallout sugar coating candy wrapper.
Yeah. It's always like I just replayed the first Fallout games, and it's like, from the very beginning, Fallout is all about politics. It's my humble opinion.
That opens up with what the Canadian citizens being shot power armor trooper, and then that's what's happening in real life right now. Right, is like over the past, over the past 8 years would be fair to say, is that there's been a movement within Canada, a MAGA movement, a Make America great again movement. Hard to say when they're Canada, but there's a MAGA movement in Canada that manifested as the truckers convoy and all that they did. Again, I'm sorry to overload foreign listeners, but there was a fiasco, let's call it, in Canada a few years ago where a bunch of hardcore ultra-right Canadian truckers all did like a convoy and they blocked roadways. And of course, the police treated them with super kindness. There's videos of the police out there hugging them and all this good kumbaya stuff. And then fast forward, you know, now we have Trump actually trying to mobilize to annex Canada, which again, direct move to fallout. So I guess what I'm trying to draw out there again for foreign listeners is just to know that this annexation of Canada in real life is not exclusively from the outside just on to them. There's also a movement within Canada that wants that. Not all Canadian people, of course, not sensible Canadian people, of course, but there is a movement up there that does want to link us. And it's, well, I think fallout shows a very real approach to how protesters and dissidents would be treated up there that didn't want that.
Yeah, that was when we started our podcast a couple of months ago. I think it was a big topic when President Trump was threatening Canada to annex it. And so we put it in our episode because we started with Fallout 1. So we had these similarities.
Wow.
So, yeah. Funny
wow.
you mentioned it.
That's, yeah.
But I didn't know that there are like people inside of Canada who are like, are pro-annexation.
Yes. Yes, and I will admit I'm a little naive to the exact origin of where those sentiments come from. I doubt they go back very much further than like 8 to 12 years. I think it's probably a hijacked right wing, like meaning that there were probably all these very disparate, separated right wing groups within Canada, and I think this is just one of those like a green light. It's sort of a green flag to be like, hey, everyone, if we come behind this banner, just like in the United States right now, migrants are the number one enemy for the Trump administration. And that brings together tons of different right-wing radicals, those that might not even like get along or like jive at first, you know, all find this common enemy. And so people sometimes laugh at the idea of Canada being annexed in real life. And I think there's a serious concern there where if you've got someone like Trump who talks about putting tariffs on Canada and making all this trade much harsher between the two, it's going to put liberal Canadian politicians in a position of looking really terrible because the right wingers within their country are going to blame them and be like, we've got weak leadership. Look at Trump. He's just telling you if we just meet his demands, then everything's going to be great. So Trump in threatening with these tariffs is actually like fanning that one group. Like he's sort of drawing blood so that the other wolves within Canada can attack further. And I don't know if that's going to come to fruition, but you can really see easily how his threats of tariffs and the punishment, like the pain that would come with them, could really like loosen up any of these progressive elements within Canada. Because there's this idea, and I don't call liberals progressive myself. I'm a lot further left than that, extreme left. But there's this kind of idea that Canada is like the progressive thing and like Americans, you can just come to Canada, like come migrate up here. Like that's a sentiment that Canadians tell us. It's a sentiment that Americans kind of share. Well, I'll just go up to Canada where the healthcare is free is kind of this idea in some people's minds. But I think that the room for that idea is starting to shrink. There's not, people can't have that idea when they're watching Canada kind of succumb to the same issues. And at first they're slow, but they're, you know, it's picking up speed. Mm-hmm. A lot of repression from their police up there too. That's my long Canadian story crazy. Though. I try.
That's good. It's good.
But it's interesting. We have not this inside views here, you know, and it's crazy how similar. So that Fallout is a, we wish that Fallout won't happen in real life, but we go into this direction again, into like another war, another conflict, which can really fast, you know, explode. And
yeah,
it's terrifying to think about it, that this game is not far from reality, and reality comes even closer to that every day.
I think it's pretty reasonable to say that we're in one of the most tense nuclear situations that we've, as humans, ever been in. And I don't know that a lot of the world's population really knows that. That's not some sort of like looking down my nose or insulting other people. What I mean to say is you've really got to look and pay attention to some specific news sources that, for example, I mean, whether you like them or hate them, it's still liberal bourgeois media, but Newsweek reported mid-August now. So it's probably late July that the United States, for the first time in 17 years, sent nuclear weapons to the UK. And that is not a good sign. As nuclear analysts that are cited in that article say, they're like, they basically said at the bottom in summary, this is some of the most flippant, most overt toying around with nuclear weapons that we've ever seen. That the idea of tactical nuclear weapons is just being played with so openly and so regularly. People are threatening to use them so often that we are now back to a sort of perpetual Cuban Missile Crisis.
Think about the Cold War era. Mm-hmm. I talk about that with my parents a lot because they lived through it, and how they felt in this situation, because it's pretty similar. And they was like, it was good that we weren't that informed about stuff. Today we have all these media to look in. We have this instant and constant push from media. We have all these news all the time, like 24/7. So that's driving you crazy, or you just I think it's always very important to not lose hope and your goodwill. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And don't go crazy. Yeah.
I would also put a thing in there just for some listeners out there. Although again, I'm speaking to a foreign audience, so I can't even recommend other better sources. But I would say the 24-hour news cycle started within my lifetime. That is a speaking particularly to the United States. Let me refine my phrase there. That in the United States, that 24-hour news cycle really came after 9/11, the supposed terrorist attacks on the country, and then it became a huge media spectacle. And in high school and in college, we would have teachers and professors say, like, you got to make sure you're on top of the news, because you never know, someday you're going to be in an interview and someone's going to ask you, you know, what's going on, and you need to know. And I sort of remember this like phrase being said, and it always felt very silly to me at the time, because I'm like, well, the news doesn't really tell you much. Like they scare you about things, but they don't really tell you a lot of details. And so, yeah, that would be something else I like to add on there for people is you don't need to overwhelm yourself to keep on top of the news, but do be mindful of what news you're watching. If they're just pushing sensationalized stories, or even if they're like, let's say it's a live thing, like it's audio or video, if they're one of those news networks that keeps teasing you, like, well, we're going to talk about it after the commercial break. I mean, they're just stringing you along to try and get you to keep watching. Their goal is to send you on an emotional roller coaster to keep you hooked. Like,
how that works is like there's another similarity to Fallout when you read these newspaper articles or see these news broadcasts and stuff, and you have it in a very like comical way, but it's also like pointing with it matches up, and it's they are pointing with the finger in a satirical way to our real world.
Very much
pretty nice, and I think you're mixing it up pretty well.
Well, hey, if we could bring the Fallout community to be a little bit more afraid of nuclear war in real life, I think that would be a shift in the correct direction for everybody.
And the concept of your show is you have like a new guest every episode?
That's a great question. So for Vault Broadcast, yes. And it's going to change shape here pretty soon. So Kelly, there comes an invite to you in this as well, to both of you, in fact. But right now, or for the last couple months, Vault Broadcast has been about interviewing one to two new guests each week. It's a one-on-one interview. Me and that guest, we talk about their craft, what got them into the scene, you know, what inspired them to do that, how was their first cosplay experience, all these sort of questions. And I really do it responsively to the guest, like you're doing right now, going in whatever direction the guest wants to go in and just have fun with them. But we're looking, I'm thinking that within the next week, so instead of two a week in that style, I'm going to cannibalize one of them. I'm going to reformat it to be a round table. So something more even like this call here, me and maybe three other guests, preferably people that have already come by for a one-on-one interview. I'm all about making people feel comfortable. I want everyone to feel at home. And so a lot of the people that are coming on the show, it's their very first interview ever. And you know, again, I'm trying to give them all a very good experience with that. And now I want to level that up, take them from just a one-on-one. And what happens if we get two other friends at the table? And I've got a whole format in mind. It's not going to be any kind of like loose, letting it just go for hours. I've got a kind of news recap I'm looking to do every week to touch on different Fallout news stories, breaking news, and kind of prompt the guests with this. And then at the end of it, I mean, this is a whole idea. It's a kind of a whole Friday night feel, a kind of just something for people to do is come by, do this round table, and then we hop off to Fallout 76 afterwards. So that's something we're going to kick off here in the next week, maybe 2 weeks at the most. But I've got some lined up people for it for our first episode. And I think it's going to be fantastic. Vault Broadcast has just opened so many doors, like just being here in this call with both of you.
Yeah, it sounds great. And I really liked how our little conversation you developed. Like, it was very nice speaking to you, and sounds promising.
I look forward to it. It's just been great. And I really thank you for having me on the show here. This has been a fun time to get to sit down and chat about it all. And also to tell people we do on Sunday nights tonight here in the United States, you know, what the day we're recording this, I am sitting down to do our tabletop game. So we're going to do our Fallout TTRPG for a couple hours tonight. And then we put that up, like I mentioned earlier, on our Tales from Tomorrow podcast. That's our second channel. And it's just such a fun thing to do. It's such a fun way to engage with Fallout in a different style than just playing the games. You get to really make that world your own and tell your own stories through it. Uh-oh.
Oh, the cat was just smashing down the remote controls. I'm sorry.
Normal. Just cat things. Typical cat things.
Yeah, sounds pretty, pretty good. And yeah, Kelly, isn't it crazy how fast 30 minutes with a good interview partner are like flying away?
So crazy. I'm so proud of myself that I asked. You know, a bit social anxiety. So
I'm so thankful you guys had me by here today. And 30 minutes, like you said, has flown by. I don't know how long you guys even keep these episodes to, but...
The interview episodes are pretty new, and we try to keep it between 20 and 35 minutes.
Well, then we're almost at the end of it. Yeah. Okay. Any last burning questions anyone has?
So you just told us what you are planning for the near future.
Yeah.
So... my last question is, you Americans call like pen and paper games tabletop games, right?
That's right. Yes,
it's kind of confusing for us Germans, because we divide it between tabletop games or with miniatures and like scenery and stuff, and we call the TTRPG we call pen and paper.
I see. I see. Okay. Pen and paper has fallen out of fashion, I think. People have used. But, you know, I mean, even now, like, I'm not doing the Fallout TTRPG as just a tabletop game. Instead, I'm doing a virtual tabletop game. So I don't know. You know, I was just thinking about that yesterday.
Yeah, it's always confusing me when I'm listening to American podcasts and they're talking about tabletop. I have always to remind myself they're talking about pen and paper. They're talking about pen and paper all the time.
Yeah, that is very fair.
Because I'm pretty much into the miniature game, you know?
For sure. And they're gorgeous. That stuff is awesome.
Thank
looking.
Thank you.
I mean the things blurring a bit into each other, because some have also figures and battle maps and so well on said. Nowadays. Oh, yeah. So
yeah, we're playing it more like a RPG too, not in the competitive way, more like with more narrative and more tests and a game master, and we like, yeah, fusing it together a little bit.
I think we run into a problem, and I'm just speculating, that if you call things an RPG over here, which might be the more appropriate word for like pen and paper, that RPG is probably the technical term, but I think most people's brains would go to a digital video game. That's where RPG is used the most. I think nowadays people might be confused talking about pen and paper, because they're like, I don't have a pen. How dare you? Yeah. I only have a keyboard.
What is paper?
Yeah. So nowadays we got the reverse problem or something. It's coming back around.
Yeah, that's what's for me. Kelly, do you have any last questions for a wonderful guest?
Oh, only some you also did with me, so quick question. So I only have one fast quick question, is what is your favorite Fallout game?
Oh, I gotta give it to 76, because it was my first one in the genre, and it is the one with multiplayer. And that is not me saying that 76 is perfect. It's not me saying that 76 is without bugs. I mean, I spent a lot of time playing single player, mostly on the Elder Scrolls side of things, Oblivion, Skyrim, etc. And so I know what sort of storytelling Bethesda can do. And I gotta say, that's my one sad part about 76, is that I don't think that the storylines in that game really pull on your heartstrings the same way as maybe a single player. There's a lot of reasons why, you know, the world has to be living and like monsters have to respawn for the next person that comes by. But 76 still just takes the cake for me, because I can play it with my friends, and that's what I'm all about.
And playing with friends always makes games better. So
if the other ones have single,
it depends.
If the other single players had multiplayer, I would probably spend a lot more time in them, I'll be honest. Oh, yeah.
That's true.
So, yeah.
So, I would say, we're at the end?
Yeah.
We're at the end.
Yeah. Thank you for being here. And to our listeners, just if you can understand the English language, check out the Vault broadcast with our great guest overseer Kyle. It was a pleasure having you here.
Thank you so much for having me, and those people can find me everywhere at Overseer Kyle. It's the easiest way. Check me out, come say hi, and I'll do the same.
Yeah. Hope to see you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Rein in den Zug, raus aus dem Vault.
Das ist NukaCast, dein Fallout-Lore-Podcast.